Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is prime time on Money FM 89.3. Now, many businesses' immediate response to COVID-19 included cost cutting, shelving away expansion plans, and freezing hiring, or worse, reorganizing. Globalization Partners, a company that simplifies global business by enabling customers to leapfrog the HR, tax, and compliance complexities in new markets, offers a completely different perspective and course of action. Though it may seem counterintuitive, this time of crisis and uncertainty presents a unique opportunity for businesses to grow regionally and hire global talent. According to Charles Ferguson, General Manager, Asia Pacific, at Globalization Partners, he joins us today with more insights. Charles, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for the invite.
So, tough times. Talk us through some of these measures and why they seem counterintuitive. Because I'm reckoning for businesses, the knee-jerk reaction would be to tighten our belts, put our heads in the sand, and just wait it out.
Absolutely. Look, it's a really incredibly fascinating time for any size business right now. And I'll say that it might sound a little cliche, almost 9 months into this pandemic, but it has, to a very large extent, democratized a lot of the challenges for businesses, small and large. But it's also provided an unprecedented level of opportunity. Exactly as you said, immediate response from a large business or a small business is and has been, number one, pull back, protect, and then immediately address the challenge in the real time. And that's a completely understandable and justifiable response, I think, earlier when this event became manifest. But as we've gone through the various stages of grief with trying to address these challenges, it's really important now to realize that the opportunities that are present by virtue of the outcome of chaos is a really interesting scenario. You know, you think about Warren Buffett's famous quote, and I'm not a fan of the literal quote, but I'm going to say it literally, and then I'll give you my point. Be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful. The point of that, in a more layperson's terminology, would be, you know, buy low, sell high, right? Mm. When the markets are receding and when folks are really looking internally, it's a great time, a great opportunity to start to judiciously place investment. And as it relates to the market opportunities that I alluded to, it's counterintuitive to be looking to expand your business right now. However, there are such tremendous opportunities, particularly on two levels, one being access to talent that has never been at such an incredibly easy and high volume as it is right now to attract on the first level. And on the second level, there is so much focus now on regionalization beyond, you know, the classic was globalization. How do you globally expand? And if you think about it realistically, there's so much impact due to trade contests between superpowers and due to the pandemic, there's so much impact now on the reliance of regional economies that there is a unique opportunity for companies, for example, here in Singapore, to expand into different markets in this region and really bolster future-proofing their growth. So we can go into detail.
You're really going to have to sell me on this, but from a layperson's perspective, it sounds like these things can only be done if you had some extra cash lying around, so to speak, if you were financially viable. A lot of smaller businesses are struggling and might find this challenging to do, or am I oversimplifying?
No, look, I think you're putting a position out there that I think is completely logical. And that's, again, why I'm sort of positioning that it's counterintuitive, but let me give you some examples. So there are a litany of government programs across the entirety of the world, but let's talk about regionally here in Southeast Asia specifically, that are providing for opportunities to draw in foreign direct investment. Now, what does that mean exactly? It doesn't mean that FDI, foreign direct investment, or that government agencies are doing these policies and trying to attract these businesses are only looking for quote unquote global multinational businesses. They're absolutely interested in fundamentally one thing, getting people back to work, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, whether it's the EDB or it's Invest Hong Kong or whatever agency it is, the ultimate success indicator is getting our citizens back into the workforce. The point being, there are a litany of free resources out there at the government level, certainly within the private sector, with respect to attracting small businesses into incubators and startups, connecting with funds. There are organizations that exist specifically to foster this type of innovation. And there are grants. You think about Enterprise Singapore helping small and medium enterprises here in this country to go overseas and explore markets. And what I'm suggesting is that there are methodologies and new types of models that can even further reduce the cost impact, one of them being employer of record services like what my firm offers. There are partners out there who can take some of the, you know, heretofore heavy burdens off of these smaller businesses and actually reduce the costs of entering into these new markets. Outside of looking at the economic opportunity of entering the market as a penetration strategy, lift it up one more level and say, if I wanted to hire a talent that doesn't exist, for example, here in Singapore, but is prevalent in another marketplace, instead of wishing and dreaming that I could go and set up a business in that market and then attract that talent, because of the advent of remote work and because of all the different sorts of pivots that have happened in the global economy over the past, you know, say 6 months, you now have a unique opportunity to tap into that talent and hire them remotely. And this is going to help, you know, some companies in more innovative areas like online services and AI, et cetera, to tap into oftentimes scarce talent resources. So it's a really incredible time, and it doesn't require inordinate amounts of investment.
And before one gets skeptical, this isn't completely altruistic on everyone's part. There is self-interest involved. There is a vested interest that we all recover, that we all move forward, right?
Absolutely correct. And look, it's not just you know, a company like Globalization Partners going out and saying, hey, we have this model and you should use it. It's the fact that it is within everyone's vested interests that the rising tide lift all the boats. The fact is that, you know, if you look at Southeast Asia, again, as a marketplace, we've added 100 million online users in the past 4 years across this region. Within the next few years, Southeast Asia will be the fourth largest economy on the face of the planet. And when you think about the way and means by which the global supply chains are starting to shift, it's not about de-risking holistically from one place or another. It's about putting resiliency and balance into company supply chain. Why I bring that up is because Southeast Asia is set to dramatically benefit from these shifts and thus feed into a lot of the services and a lot of the products and solutions that small and medium enterprises across the region are hungering to bring to a larger stage, a global stage.
Charles Ferguson, General Manager, Asia Pacific at Globalization Partners. So these measures can work for smaller entities or larger ones. Do they have to be tweaked to some degree?
Let's talk about, for example, attracting talent or competing with larger businesses. For sure, small and medium enterprises, by any measure, have a lot more inherent flexibility and potential agility to tackle some of these challenges and thus, you know, take advantage of some of these opportunities because they can turn some of their policies and cultural hallmarks into opportunity as opposed to larger companies that have to really, it's turning a battleship versus turning a speedboat. And I'll tell you right now, the companies that are going to be successful, the companies that are going to win are the ones who maintain that startup mentality, who focus on talent and talent acquisition and talent management, and who have speed and time as the essence.
Where are we, let's say, in terms of people's perceptions of SMEs? Because I got to say, I'm Gen X, so I grew up in a time and even now have this idea that, oh, I always want to work for the larger companies, more stable. There's that iron rice bowl mentality, but talent today different, yes?
Look, that's a great point. This is something I get really excited and passionate about. If you think about this, the World Economic Forum sometime last year went out with a survey across ASEAN. They surveyed 56,000 young people across the region. Young people in their estimation was, you know, 30 or below. The feedback was that well over a third of those that they spoke with were completely focused and interested in either joining an enterprise that had an entrepreneurial mindset or were keen to work for a startup. So when you think about that, when over a third, and that's obviously an increase over previous years where, to your point, the old sort of, not the old, because I don't want to call myself old, I'm a Gen X guy too, but Let's accept it, Charles.
Come on.
Yes, we have to accept it to some extent. But let's just say previous wisdom would dictate that you would want to join up with a large multinational. There's stability, things of this nature. However, the key drivers right now for a lot of companies in attracting the type of talent that is out there in the younger generations is really interesting, because what they're focused on is more about culture, more about experience, more about freedom, more about the ability to learn new things in the workplace than they are in the stability element. And so therefore, if the statistics from the WEF survey are indicative, more younger folks are looking for these entrepreneurial experiences. And I would position that the pandemic has exacerbated that. It has amplified that, because a lot of the survey results talked about things like the eagerness or excitement around ability to work from anywhere in the world, or ability to find their own work schedule, or ability to do their work on a mobile device. You know, our young people across this region are often hailed as the most mobile internet engaged population on earth. And when you put all that into context, the larger firms have a lot of technology debt that they bring to the table. They have a lot of heritage that is challenging to kind of unwind and rewire for the new reset that we're experiencing right now. Mm. The smaller firms have a higher likelihood of ability to pivot in these sort of uncertain times. I would also call out to you, Howie, that multinational corporation is not a proxy for size. Mm. So there are companies in Singapore, as we know, who have operations here, but also have some operations across the border in Malaysia. They have some stuff going on in Indonesia. They might have some support coming out of the Philippines, et cetera. And therefore, by definition, they are multi-country operations. But they might have 50 employees, 20 employees. So the ability to provide policies and technologies and structures and business models to help those companies be buoyant and successful, particularly through this volatile period, is paramount to success.
And whilst we're on the subject of jobs, then lots of them have been lost. And so now these particularly skilled international candidates have this unprecedented passage, right, into working wherever they want for whatever company, and they're so coveted. What are these coveted jobs? And let's say a Gen Xer like myself wants to gun for one of them. What am I lacking?
That's a great question. So look, the coveted jobs, I mean, you have to think about kind of what's really coming to sharp focus, particularly, again, because of this pandemic. Now, I will state for the record that a lot of the things that we're all sort of waking up to were actually on the radar pre-COVID-19. So these are not sort of like, we're not getting sideswiped at the intersection by a lot of these changes in focal point.
It's just the pandemic sped it up.
It sped it up, and it put some things perhaps into some degree a bit of sharper focus. It might have realigned some of the priorities on a global scale, but regardless, these were things that a lot of businesses were already taking a look at. You know, the tired cliche of the future of work, ... has, to your point, been very much sped up. So, you know, cloud computing, anything regarding digital platforms, so artificial intelligence, robotic process automation, machine learning.
Okay.
Precisely. And sort of adjacent to that, thinking about things like education, e-learning and technical training, an adjacency to that would be things like telehealth and different aspects of healthcare. It's not just a certified nurse's assistant working in the ward. It's also the ability to take knowledge of healthcare and put it into a digital construct and be able to serve people and engage people in this new environment we find ourselves in. Over the past 6 months, companies around the world collectively have been spending $15 billion a week on investments in cybersecurity, application program interfaces, and other advancements around blockchain to protect their intellectual property and the data that they collect. $15 billion a week, I would say to you, is a pretty strong indicator of an area that if I were looking for a role, I would be focusing on, because that's quite a significant amount of money. I would say also logical areas like e-commerce. I mean, think about how many people in this country have been put to work through delivery and logistics around e-commerce. And hey, you know, healthcare does not only mean when you're sick, but also preventative. So think about fitness. Go out there and get fit. And the fitness industry has witnessed a spike in interest for at-home training and virtual trainers on demand. YouTube, one of the top areas of request right now for YouTube videos is kind of DIY self-help and fitness videos, right? It's just a fascinating time where you see some of these heretofore futuristic models becoming commonplace. You know, I think that every business that's listening to this conversation should pat themselves on the back, because at some point they have had to do a pivot towards remote work, some form of remote management. And I believe that if you had asked anyone in December or January, if they were prepared to turn their entire company into a digital enterprise and completely remotely manage their partners, suppliers, and employees, they would have laughed. And once they got their composure, they would say, no, we're not ready for that. And within the course of maybe 8 weeks, virtually every company, you know, on earth had to confront this, right? Yeah. So it's phenomenal. And the government in Singapore has done an incredible job of providing infrastructure and support to get companies on this path. And it's continuing with Skills Future, with a whole litany of programs, both private and public sector partnerships, providing training for free to anyone who wants to raise their hand and reskill. And the infrastructure exists to make that happen. So I think it's a very exciting time.
Charles, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Charles Ferguson, General Manager, Asia Pacific at Globalization Partners on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.